and welcome back to Seismic Podcasting, the show where I'll be helping you not to become a podcaster, but to build a podcast that supports the mission and vision of your business or organization. Now, if you're joining us for the first time today, I would recommend going back and listening to the previous episodes because I'm going to be building on top of ideas that we've covered in earlier episodes, and it would give you a bit more clarity if you know what I'm referring to. So today we're taking quite a leap forward and we're going to examine the strategy that we use to launch podcasts quickly and create a mindset of continuous improvement. Continuous improvement for the listener, I might add. The strategy I'm referring to is called lean production. Now, many of you might already be familiar with lean production concepts, and I dare say you're running your organizations with lean principles in place. Now, whether you are or not, I think it's going to be useful to revise the background and history of the concept to give you the context that you need on how this applies to us in podcasting today. We have to go back to 1920s America, the Roaring Twenties as it was known, a time of huge social change, a time that gave rise to consumerism, a decade of prosperity and riotous living, and of bootleggers and gangsters, flappers and hot jazz, flagpole sitters and marathon dancers. Kichiro Toyoda, the founder of Toyota, he was an innovative Japanese businessman who spent his postgraduate years working in the family loom business. And then in the 1920s, he went to the UK and the USA to further his knowledge of manufacturing. And during his time there, he noticed two things. One was the car. Cars were starting to be a far more normal mode of transport. The second thing he noticed was the American supermarket business model. He saw an opportunity. So when Kichiro returned to Japan, he took an old Chevrolet, some great engineers, and improved the car to what they thought it could be as a way to convince his brother-in-law, Risaburo, to set up an automobile division of the existing loom business. And he was successful. And so the Toyota Motor Corporation was formed. But there was a problem. Toyota knew they couldn't compete with their American counterparts. They had huge resources, even during the post-World War II era, enough to create huge assembly lines and storage facilities for inventory. Toyota just couldn't afford to sit on that much inventory. So what do? Kichiro remembered what he'd learned in America, not about the car, but about the American supermarkets. He saw that products were purchased and then the shelf restocked as it was needed. Inventory worked on a just-in-time workflow. He realised that cars could be built with the same workflow. Between himself and Taichi Ono and Aiji Toyoda, Toyota were able to create a system with minimal inventory and minimal waste in all areas of the business. That's time, money, workers. And they successfully achieved the idea that cars can be made efficiently and profitably. That philosophy works so well that today it's known as the Toyota Way, or more commonly called lean production, which is now implemented across almost all industries to some degree. And Toyota, they actually went on to be the biggest car manufacturer in the world. What's interesting here is that this was possible because of their limitations and boundaries. They had to get smart. They had to get creative. They had to think inside the box being their limitations and boundaries. There's a quote here from Seth Godin that I really like. With unlimited time, unlimited money, and unlimited resources, of course you might do something differently, but your project is defined by the limitations and boundaries that are in place when you set out to accomplish something. You build something remarkable because of the boundaries, not without them. So have you ever been in that position where you have something you want to achieve, but you look around and you see others you're competing with, and they just have more available to them. More resources, more money, more experience, more leverage. Do you consider those as limitations that are going to hinder you? Probably. The alternative is to treat them as the boundaries in which to be creative and look to innovate something new and better. Now today, the same principles are used with great success across a range of industries and global businesses from Intel to Nike. But it turns out it's not just for huge corporations. Back in 2011, Eric Ries showed the world how lean principles can be used within organizations of all shapes and sizes. He did it with a book called The Lean Startup, which if you haven't read it, I would highly recommend reading. Now, what we've done is we have, in essence, translated the Lean Startup principles into lean podcasting principles. And that really is what I want to share with you today. And we've broken it down into six parts. Number one is the minimum viable episode. This is adapted from the more commonly known concept, minimum viable product. Instead of investing all of your budget in a super polished, high production value show with tons of experimental features and sections, start simple. It's really easy to get caught up in wanting to replicate the likes of Diary of a CEO or Modern Wisdom, but take a moment, visit their YouTube channels and go back to their earliest videos. They were nothing like they are now. They were MVEs. They were minimum viable episodes that allowed the show to be made with minimum friction and allows them to be nimble and adapt the show as early adopters start to weigh in with their thoughts. It's a bit like planting seeds and watching which ones grow. This approach will save you time, resources, and allow you to focus on what actually resonates with your listeners. The important word here is viable. Don't completely cheap out and cut corners and release something that just isn't anywhere near up to scratch. Take advantage of the incredibly low barriers to entry and falling prices of quality recording equipment, at the very least, to get your recording quality sounding acceptable. And I will be covering that in more detail in a future episode. Principle number two is the record, release, reflect feedback loop. This is the continuous cycle of improvement. You record an episode, you release it to the world to get insights, and then you consider what you have learned from the feedback to inform what you record next. And the quicker you can make that loop, the better. The idea at this stage is to learn as much as possible. Now, some ways you can speed up that feedback loop is releasing more regularly, or you can contact your listeners directly for their feedback, rather than waiting for it to come to you. Principle number three is adapt or advance. So once you have a few iterations of the feedback loop under your belt, you can start to consider what you might want to adapt or what you might want to stick with. Perhaps there are certain sections of your show that just aren't working for your listeners, so you can adapt and change that section, or maybe even remove it completely. Remember, early adopters are a lot more open to changes like that. If you find that certain types of guest or lines of conversation are really popular, you can double down and you can make more episodes in line with what your audience wants. Principle number four is listener discovery. You are actually in the fortunate position where you interact with your listener base or your customers, in many cases across multiple touch points. So you can use insights from other parts of your organization to feed your podcast. You can learn about customer needs and wants through other marketing efforts or from your sales team who interact with customers face to face. What can they tell you that you can use to shape your show to fit the needs of the listener? Principle number five is validated learning. It's important to understand the metrics that actually matter when we go through the record, release, reflect loop. If we use vanity metrics, such as downloads, we're not really getting to the bottom of whether or not our efforts are creating the outcomes we want to see. So, for example, let's say we want to increase the amount of listeners that click through a URL in the show notes to a sign-up page and take the action to sign up. Let's say that currently only 10% of your listeners do so. So we put in place a new call to action in the episode to do just that. If after doing that, we see an uptick in downloads and sign-up numbers, it could be tempting to celebrate. But if we don't see an increase in the percentage of those downloads signing up, then the new feature hasn't actually worked. If, however, we saw a drop in downloads, but of the ones we do get, 20% sign up, then that feature actually has shown signs of working. So it's a little bit tough to get your head around at first, but it's really important to understand. Principle number 6 is adaptive content creation. When looking at the logistics and practicalities of running your podcast, we need to create it in such a way that we have the shortest possible production cycle. So what does that mean? Well, it means to avoid making episodes in big batches. If we make batches of, let's say, 10 episodes for a weekly release, and we learn something really important after 4 episodes have gone out, well, then we can't very easily make changes to the next 6 episodes without creating a lot of waste, wasted time, wasted money, wasted effort. If we were making the show weekly in line with the release schedule, then we can easily adapt our production to include lessons from the feedback loop. So let me just quickly recap those 6 principles for you. Number 1 is the minimum viable episode. Number 2 is a record, release, reflect feedback loop. Number 3 is adapt or advance. Number 4, listener discovery. Number 5, validated learning. And finally, number 6, adaptive content creation. As we've mentioned before, many podcasters or production companies put a lot of energy into the launch, making sure that it goes out with a bang and gets in the charts in its opening week. We take a different approach, a long-term lean production strategy, a slow burn of organic growth based on real feedback from early adopters who are eager to hear what you had to say without a big PR push bringing their attention to it. And we know that it can be tempting to get tons of ears on your new show. That can be hugely motivating. But remember what we spoke about last week. What comes after that initial spike? It's the slump. And that can be deeply demotivating, usually enough to make people stop making episodes, it turns out. Also, to us, the idea of spending budget to get as much mass market attention as possible on something that hasn't yet been tested just seems kind of odd. Is the first iteration of your podcast ready for that much attention? I'd say probably not. So I know we've covered a lot of ground in this one, and we will be unpacking each of these concepts in more detail as the show progresses, but that should give you a pretty clear idea of how you can think about actually making your podcast happen. And importantly, avoid making one that is destined for the overgrowing podcast graveyard. You can email me with any questions or feedback on sam.turner@soundquake.co.uk. We will be back next week with some ideas on format options for your show, because yes, believe it or not, there is more to podcasting than an interview. Take care, and I will see you then.